Welcome to Advisor Go Radio. I'm Stephanie Sammons.
And I'm Zach Miller.
Hi, Zach. How you doing today?
Pretty good. I think you're probably doing a little better. You had a birthday this week?
Oh, yes. Another year. I'm 42 and holding. I'm staying right there.
That's like 1,000 in social media years, right?
Yeah, something like that. Feels like it. I feel like I've aged exponentially in the last 2 years.
I wonder if...
Self-employment.
Yeah, that'll do it to you.
Self-employment and children.
So did you do anything special for your birthday?
Actually, I did. I did an extreme makeover social media edition for Investment News yesterday.
That was a shameless plug.
I ended up...
What'd you do? How does that work?
Well, when they asked me to do it, I really wanted to block out September 13th to just be a me day, you know, go get my nails done and get pampered and all that good stuff. But of course, it didn't turn out because that was the day that Investment News wanted to do this webcast. So it was pretty fun. So they had
about 1,000 people on?
Yeah, they had over 1,000 register. I'm not sure how many actually attended. They were saying usually it's, you know, 75%, something like that. But what they did was they identified a financial advisor who is really successful. Her name's Deborah Fox, and she has her niche is college planning and college funding. And she's really done a lot of extensive research in that area to help families with, you know, creative angles for college funding, and that's her specialty, and she's built a practice around it. And then she's also got a program where she helps financial advisors systematize their business. So it's interesting. She's really successful, and she's hardly dabbled in social media. She's very fascinated by it. She knows she needs to do it. She's got basic profiles out there. But, you know, she hasn't put any time or effort into it.
How's she getting clients currently? Is it local?
Referrals. Local? Okay. Referrals. And her practice is really national.
Okay. But all through referrals.
National based.
Okay.
Right. That's you know, the case with most advisors, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway, they just had three of us on, and my section of the program was LinkedIn. So I had to take her LinkedIn profile down to the studs and build it back up. And so it was fun. There were a couple other ladies on there who one of them discussed Facebook and then one of them took Twitter. And that was it. It was kind of a take on the whole extreme makeover idea that you see on TV.
Is there going to be a follow-up episode to see if she implements some of the ideas that you guys gave her?
No, they did some Q&A at the end and just asked her, you know, what she thought and if she learned anything. And she learned a lot. She was so excited to go out and implement some of these ideas. But I think there's a replay. They'll have a replay on it. I'll try to find a link to it.
We can post the link on the blog.
So that's what I did for my birthday. Yeah.
Sure.
So that's what I did for my birthday.
That sounds fun. You know, I would have expected something a little more exotic, but...
Well, I did eat an iced cinnamon roll. You know those cinnamon rolls in the can? Did you ever have those as a kid?
No.
Oh, they are to die for. My family cooked the cinnamon rolls for me and surprised me with them, so I did eat one of those. And then I went for a 2-mile run because I felt
guilty. We worked it off, yeah.
Exactly. So... That was kind of fun. And did you see that LinkedIn poll that we ran on with financial advisors? Did you see the results of that?
I did. It probably went as expected, no?
I don't know. I guess I was thinking it would be more evenly, the answers would be more evenly dispersed. But
so you were asking what, you know, what financial advisors are looking for out of media help?
Yeah, I just put a question out there and I threw it out to a group, the Wired Advisor Group and some other financial advisor groups, and actually got 90 responses, which I thought was pretty decent.
Great.
But it was a simple question. What's your greatest need as a financial advisor? because Zach, we've talked about this. You know, what do advisors want most? You know, what's the hot button? What do they really, really need? And the answers were investment strategy or research, practice management tips, marketing insights, education and support, and qualified leads to contact. So what would be your guess as to what the overwhelming majority chose?
You know my take on this. It's always leads. At the end of the day, that's what every advisor wants.
That's what it was. 62% qualified leads to contact. That's what they chose. And the most of the respondents were over the age of 45. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, and what do you think? Again, we've talked about this before on the program. I mean, social media, we've always framed it as a way not just to like sort of, obviously there's engagement and there's, you know, reach and marketing, you know, pizzazz. But at the end of the day, you really want social media to fit into your sales funnel.
Right.
And so how realistic is that expectation that advisors are looking to social media for increased lead generation?
I think it's hugely realistic because I think it accelerates the process. You've got access to all of this intelligence and transparency about people's lives, what they care about, what's going on in their lives, you know, events like births and deaths and weddings and through a site like Facebook. The intelligence in and of itself is so powerful. Now,
but we're talking the step beyond intelligence, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it does allow you to investigate an angle for making contact and you know, having striking up a conversation where you've got some commonalities or and common interest. And an easy way to connect, really. I mean, Facebook is probably the most difficult. You know, it's got the biggest barrier to entry to get into somebody's circle there, right? Twitter, it's simple. Mm-hmm. You know, you follow someone and you can send them a message, mm-hmm. or at least publicly send them a message. Unless they're following you as well, then you can send them a private message. But and LinkedIn is fairly easy if you want to connect with somebody to find a way to do it.
Did I ever tell you a story about Cale Smith?
No. Tell me. And I can tell talk me about Cale Smith.
He's an advisor in South Florida. He's based in the Keys. I could talk about this publicly because we did a webinar together on my site, Trade Streaming.
Okay.
He's an individual practitioner. He had done some other things earlier in his life. He decided he wanted to be a money manager, an investment advisor. And he created a way, almost like, you know, there's this whole kind of lean startup movement. He's sort of leading the lean startup movement for investment advisors, like how to create a practice, to bootstrap a practice. And
cool.
He uses the web exclusively. So he's based in the Keys, first of all, so he doesn't really even have a local community to market to. He's used, you know, Twitter and his blog. He told me he has 7,000 people who are subscribing to his blog, which is a really big number.
Yeah.
And all of his clients have come through that sales process, through, you know, originally hitting his blog, liking what he's talking about, signing up for the newsletter, and then eventually contacting him to ask them to manage part of their assets. And it's a great story, and he's helping to teach other advisors to do the same thing.
Managing assets for clients?
He's doing separately managed accounts, I believe.
Okay, so yeah. He's using that sales process, you know, publishing content through a blog, social media, building community.
Newsletter.
Getting them to the marketing. Blog to mm-hmm. opt in, right?
Yep.
Subscribe to the newsletter, where he gets to then cultivate the relationship because they gave him permission to stay in touch with them and mm-hmm. then, you know, contacting him for help. That's the process you're describing, right?
Exactly. And one piece I think advisors, I talk about a lot, I think gets lost is post, you know, qualification. Once somebody becomes a client, particularly if they've come in through social media, they continue to stay in touch via social media. And like, so every time Cale sends out an email, talking about performance or talking about what he's seeing in the market, that's service. That is how they expect service. And they feel very close to him in that process because he's very transparent in what he does.
No, I think that's the ticket. You know,
that's the model, I think.
That is the model. And but you've got to make a commitment. We do this in our businesses. You know, that's how Wired Advisor's been built, is publishing content and capturing leads and cultivating those relationships, just like you're doing with trade streaming and the new rules for investing.
Mm-hmm.
It works, but you have to make a commitment to it. You know, you've got to publish good content. You've got to really provide value and insights. And
there's also that initial stage where you're publishing content, and nobody's really responding, and you're not really building the list. I mean, that's probably right. The hardest part, I think, is that it's not necessarily getting out of inertia, because it's relatively easy just to open up a blog and start writing. It's keeping writing while you haven't necessarily seen the fruit of your labor yet.
Right, and having the patience that it takes to really build and cultivate a community around your thought leadership.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Kale has a specific model. I mean, it's this sort of lean startup thing where he feels, and he provides a lot of information. He did during our webinar. You know, if he can get to $10 million under assets, which is not a big number per se, he can pay himself $100,000. The rest of his cash is kept specifically in the model itself. That's part of the model that he describes. He calls it the spoke funds, but basically where his net worth is tied up alongside his client's net worth. And he feels he can, you know, he can build a very viable business doing that. And I think he's been in the business 2 or 3 years. He's very close to his goal right now. And
is he an RIA?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Yep. And does he meet these clients face to face?
Many he has not, never met.
And do they put, you know, are they putting nickels and dimes with him? Or these? Is he going for, you know, thousands of relationships where he manages a little piece of the pie? Or is he, you know, trying to get the whole wallet share?
Not the whole wallet. I don't believe he's going for the whole wallet. It's a concentrated portfolio of equities. So, you know, I'd be lying if I said I knew what his minimums were, but
okay.
I assume it's like 100, you know, 250, something like that. Not $5,000.
That blows me away. And I mean, what's his secret sauce? You know, what is it that, is it service? Is it just staying in touch and providing valuable insights frequently?
I think we have to get him on the program. I think he'd be happy to talk about it.
I mean, that's, I think it always is going to come down to service plan, service mm-hmm. model, and taking that model and applying it using social tools and online tools, blogging, email newsletters, like mm-hmm. we talked about in the last show. That's really impressive. I'd love to get him on here. I'd love to hear more about it.
Okay. I'll put that on my to-do list.
You know, I also think there's a likability factor that comes into play.
He's a very likable person, and it shines through in his content. Yeah, right. He's not an introvert where he's hiding and he's just sort of, you know, pushing out data throughout the day. He's explaining things. He looks friendly. He's affable. Totally, I agree with that.
That's one of the things we talked about in Makeover yesterday was, and we've discussed it before, is credibility, you know, instilling trust and confidence in the people who meet you online. Do you have a good-looking website or blog? You know, do mm-hmm. you have a nice professional image, picture of yourself? It's so important.
You know, there were these companies years ago that went around to financial advisors selling sort of prepackaged websites, particularly uh-huh. as people started to go more and more independent. And they're, you know, they're these very cookie, you can tell the website, everybody has the same website. I'm not going to mention the company by name, but, you know, it's very boxy. The fonts are outdated. The color schemes are outdated. There's no social media integration. It's clear that it's a website from another era. And I think it did its job during, you know, that transition period where people were starting to get used to the net. But it's very clear to me when you go to a site like that, that the person's, at least their web presence, isn't as serious as what they would commit to in person.
Yeah. You know, Seth Godin had a blog post years ago. I'll have to go dig it up. But talking about, you know, your web presence, should look like you're in your best suit going to meet a brand new big client.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that, you know, dressing for success, then it puts a whole new spin on it. But I'm a huge believer in that. It's credibility is so important. I've seen guys, not necessarily financial advisors, out there. They're hugely active in social media. They have tons and tons of followers. And then I go to their blog and I'm like, oh my gosh,
right.
The credibility is just lacking substantially. So
I think originally people were able to get away with that. It's getting harder to, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because design has become inexpensive, right? Mm-hmm. It's a commodity. I mean, some designers are better than others, no doubt, but
you can even buy, you know, pre-existing templates. Again, they're, you know, they're sort of one size fits all, but you know, they're nice. They certainly give a professional appearance.
True. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a big fan of customization because I think that just that making that extra investment, it's not that much money, to look different is, mm-hmm. is
big. To stand out. Yeah. So speaking of which, that's probably a good segue into, that report that you sent me, the, social media's impact on Wall Street. Remember that one?
Yeah. I'd love to hear about it. Too. So I have 20% battery left on my Mac. So let's roll.
I'll talk very quickly.
Let's talk about this report. So social media's impact on Wall Street. It was done by Tom Lydon, who has the site ETF Trends, right? ETFtrends.com.
That's right. He was very early in sort of the online analysis of ETFs.
Yeah, I love his site.
And it was co-authored with the USC School of Business.
Okay, so it was called Social Media's Impact on Wall Street. So I didn't have a chance to dig into it, but what, you know, what was it about? Was it a worthwhile read? Did you learn anything?
I think so. I don't. There's not a lot of new information in this report. It's rehashing other people's research, and it starts out with basically saying, you know, talking about some of the things we talked on this show, just general trends towards social media. How many people are using online? How many people are using text? Broken down by age, by gender, how many people are using voice. There's a comparison of Facebook versus Twitter and the social demographics between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of generic stuff. And then what I thought was more interesting was the middle part of the piece, which talks about social media and Wall Street, sort of where that hits what we're talking about. And it's funny, as I'm reading this, I talked a lot about this in my book, Trade Stream Your Way to Profits. It's less how advisors are using social media, although there is a section on that, and more how investors are using social media to make better decisions. So there's like a story in here about two Ohio farmers that were talking about, Nebraska, talking about the quality of the corn crops in one season, and someone mentioned they were really good and drove the price up, and the guy made $200,000 off of it. You know, the ability to talk about stocks or securities, you know, social media is a very powerful tool. You can inflate or deflate stock prices just from having somebody talk about it. More interesting were some of these trading strategies around social media tools. So I wrote about this on my blog. Seeking Alpha, a company, for full disclosure, I used to work for and still an equity holder there. Seeking Alpha is an aggregator of blogging content. So if you're a financial advisor and you're talking about the market, you know, that's one way you can help. You submit your content to Seeking Alpha, and Seeking Alpha has a very broad audience, and that hopefully can get you some eyeballs very quickly. A group of researchers at Purdue University looked at the most highly commented articles on Seeking Alpha and then compared it to the market, and you know, articles that saw an unusual amount of activity, if you were to invest in the stocks that saw that, you know, on the positive side, then shorted the ones on the negative side, you would beat the market by like 8% a month, some crazy number. And in comparison to Wall Street Journal, it was like almost double what the Wall Street Journal was. So, you know, there's value in all this stuff, right? There's value in them hills, but it's, you know, for individual investors, you know, there's hedge funds and everybody's trying to find ways to game the system. For advisors, it just means like, you know, getting your content into that milieu. It just means that, you know, you have really smart, action-oriented people reading that kind of stuff. And that to me is, you know, underscores the value of involvement in social media.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, we've seen some similar research come out about Twitter mm-hmm. predicting investment returns or I guess the direction of the market or particular equities based upon the sentiment that's captured.
That's a great point. He mentions that study. It was a professor, a Belgian professor at Indiana University called Professor Bolin, who sort of looked at the collective mood of Twitter and how that impacted the Dow movements or forecast Dow movements, and had something like 87% accuracy or something like that. So, you know, there's actually a hedge fund now set up to trade on this type of information. And yeah, I mean, that's totally a great example of how people are using this type of information to make money.
Yeah, I think we've seen a couple of little platforms popping up that are trying to take that research and build a platform on top of it.
What I thought was interesting is there's a section on financial advisors, and they quoted a survey that was put out by American Century. They surveyed 303 financial professionals, found 86% of respondents in 2011 have a social media profile. So good job, guys. You're on social media. That's the significant first step. That's up like from 73% just the year before. So nice adoption rate here.
And that's very high. I wonder who they surveyed.
Yeah, I was going to say it seems like a self-selected group, right? Maybe they asked the questions on Twitter.
Yeah, because I'll tell you that, you know, a lot of these firms that are getting on board with their compliance archiving solutions, mm-hmm. The compliance archiving companies it's a challenge to get everybody to turn on, sign up basically mm-hmm. to participate. Numbers are under 20%. Of the sales force.
Wow.
So it's still very, very low adoption rate.
Independence. There are a couple other points worth calling out. 77% of respondents reported that they have business related plans for social media, right? So not only are they have a profile, but they're actually coming up with a plan to integrate it into their process. Again, these numbers sound very high to me, but
it's important.
And, almost nobody believes that social media is a fad with little value for business. Something like 15% of people. So it shows that the financial industry is getting very serious about the potential of using social media to market themselves.
I think that's great. You know, I think there's a huge window of opportunity, and 5 years from now, or maybe sooner than that, the way things change so quickly, I think it'll be like anything else. It'll be saturated. Mm-hmm. There will be tons and tons of financial advisors who have integrated social media into their practices, and they're significantly leveraging those tools. But right now, you know, the next couple of years, I think there's a big opportunity to really build traction.
Get in now. It's the ground floor.
That's right. Yeah. Well, about this study, I have a question. You know, all these trading strategies and, making money in the short term and getting in and getting out. I mean, yeah, I think that appeals to a certain segment of the population, but what about the investor? You know, that's who financial advisors want. They want clients who take a longer term view than just day to day and tracking trends and that kind of, more proactive.
These are totally implementable strategies. Like, I actually have clients in a strategy that I've defined and I find in my book called the Guru Strategy, where I've created a software tool that follows the buys and sells of some of the top money managers in the world, people who take big positions and things. So, you know, some of them are hedge fund managers, some of them are mutual fund managers. And I found that I can replicate their returns by sort of piggybacking on their ideas.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I rebalance quarterly. I've averaged over the past, I've had real money behind the strategy for about 2 years, but, you know, backdated over 10 years, I've beaten the market on average, huge percentage. I mean, it's averaging like 20% a year returns over a period of time where there was no returns.
Now, is that like Alpha Trends or alphatrends.com?
Like Alpha Clone?
Alpha Clone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I use that software, and, you know, out of a universe of 2,500 different funds, I identified 10 to 12 of them that this strategy works really well for. And I created a diversified portfolio. So I've got a biotech firm in there. I've got somebody that invests in sort of industrials and I rebalance quarterly. It's almost like it's on autopilot in a way. And, that's a strategy. That's an investment strategy. I'm not a day trader in and out of the market. I rebalance once a quarter and it just sits there, and the strategy seems to work over the long term. So it's a quantitative strategy from that perspective, but
awesome.
I think the web and some of the new software tools are going to make those types of, I hate to call them black boxes because I feel like if you call it a black box, it doesn't work. But those types of strategies are there for advisors. And some of the forward-thinking advisors are not only using social media for marketing purposes, but they're also using social media to create investment strategies around.
Well, absolutely. I think we should do an entire show on the software tools like AlphaClone, because that's fascinating. Now, when you go in there, and I guess we could talk about this in another show, but do you sort of handpick your strategy, or do they have packaged strategies following the gurus?
Both. So, you know, you could theoretically go in and say, I want to mimic Warren Buffett, right? So I want to buy every new stock that Warren Buffett adds to his portfolio. There's a research platform on AlphaClone, so you can actually test whether that strategy would work over time. Hedge fund managers works better if you buy their newest holding. Some works better if you buy their largest holding. Some you can replicate by buying their three largest holdings. There's some nuances there. So you can go and buy a prepackaged strategy where you can invest in, you know, the most popular holdings of all the Tiger funds. That seems to be a good strategy over time. Or you create your own, which is what I did. And there's a variation of the both. So it also turns out that if you own the most popularly held technology company of all hedge funds or, you know, the asset management world, that's a great strategy over time, right? The drawdowns are really low, something like 17% on average, and the returns are huge. So it happens to be Apple right now, but, you know, at one point in time it was Motorola, one time it was Qualcomm, at one point it was Microsoft. So that's strategy.
You just want to get out at the right time.
So you're using it's somewhat momentum based because you're following the inflows and outflows of what, you know, these guru investors have in their own portfolios. So if they're exiting, you know, that's typically a signal that you're going to end up selling in your own portfolio. So
and you find out there's a lag time, right?
Yeah.
But that's sort of irrelevant because it's still turning out to be a profitable strategy.
The research has shown that even there is a lag time, but that it doesn't seem to be significant.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I guess the other thing I was thinking is, you know, the value of an advisor is to help a client do the right thing at the right time. So emotions come into play. And even, you know, if you're managing your own money, and we're all victims of fear and greed, you know, we're all wired to behave that way. And even if you're managing your own money and you're using some of these strategies that quote unquote work really well, there's still that emotional factor, right? That you stay put if through good times and bad times, or you make the right moves at the right times and you don't make emotional decisions. I think that is still and always will be a significant challenge for human beings to be successful investing on their own.
I totally agree. And I see what's happening is, you know, there used to be really two distinct camps. One's like the buy and hold thing, sort of the anti-trading, and the other was sort of the day trader, the in and out. And I think you can create a very responsible strategy that involves, you know, obviously an eye towards the future and long-term returns, but also saying, well, you know, giving the data flow, you know, I'm actually going to change what I'm doing right now. And there's a whole movement for like tactical asset allocation and stuff like that. That's saying,
right,
I'm going to use ETFs. I'm going to use a broad-based portfolio, but you know what, when things break through their 20-day moving average, I'm getting out. And, you know, I see sort of the intersection of those two camps now. Right. And I think social media and the internet in general is helping to empower that.
Yeah, it's really incredible how the industry is changing. I want to discuss this further, maybe on our next show, just talk about some of these software tools that are available to help help financial advisors make better investment decisions. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome.
Great. Great talking to you.
Okay.
I'm sorry we didn't do this on your birthday.
Oh, hey, you know,
there's always next year. My birthday's coming up too as well. So the 23rd of September. So maybe we'll hit that.
Oh, awesome. I'll have to jot that down. We'll have a big party.
Thanks. Social media cake.
There you go. We'll put social media icons on your cake.
I guess that should wrap up the session, huh?
I think so. Good show. And it was great chatting with you as always.
As well as with you.
And we'll see you next time.
Catch you later.